You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me in the broom closet, David Goss, and out in the octagon, maybe horizontal, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. It is Friday morning after the knockout round, and guys, I have a little bit of a caveat here. Anything I say on this show can't be held against me.
Guys, when people when coaches are like, oh, it's the playoffs and everyone's playing injured, Andrew Wiebe dragging himself here. Matt Doyle stretching out the back because he's limping through segments right now.
Yeah.
But both of them soldiering
on. We're a gimpy squad. We're getting some, you know, pain injections beforehand. I'm running on like 3 hours of sleep. But
this is, it's do or die time. Yeah. It's win or go
home. We're here because we love it, baby. We're here because we absolutely love it. This is the time of the year that just gets me so jacked. I am jacked, though. I'm starting to get, you know what? Your energy has been transferred over to me.
I'm producing
you.
Yeah,
a little bit of a transfusion there. Look, it's been a crazy knockout round and a crazy Audi 2016 MLS Cup playoffs. So far, we are four games in, and look, three of four home teams won. We expected that. I thought all four home teams would win. The lone upset here is the Montreal Impact going to RFK Stadium and slapping DC United.
Impact to Montreal.
Yeah, Impact to Montreal. Well, yeah, I like that.
I think they earned that after that
they
performance.
They definitely earned that. Toronto FC moved on Wednesday night with a 3-1 win against Philly. LA got a 3-1 win against RSL. 4-2 Montreal over DC. Those two goals for DC coming late on. Really garbage time goals. And then Seattle with a 1-0 win over Sporting Kansas City. I'm 3-for-4. Are you guys all 3-for-4? I mean, did anybody pick this Montreal game?
No, I picked chalk.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, and that was the one game. That was the one game I thought there would be an upset possibility in, and because of the timeliness here, we're going to start there. No guests on today's show. That's because we have so much to talk about, because there are four more games coming up like 48 hours from now.
Sunday is going to be awesome.
Yeah, Sunday is a day in which you need to hydrate. You need to do whatever you need to do to be ready for like 8 to 9, 10 hours of straight MLS playoff action. It gets started at 3 p.m. Eastern with Montreal and the New York Red Bulls at Stade Saputo. At 5 p.m. Eastern, L.A. Colorado. Both those games are on ESPN. So you go ESPN, ESPN, and then an FS1 doubleheader to end the night. And that'll be Toronto FC, New York City FC from BMO, and then the Seattle Sounders hosting FC Dallas. So 3 p.m. till about, I mean, realistically, guys, midnight?
11:30 midnight, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking 9 hours. We're talking a marathon. Well, you better get some snacks
ready.
I'm
about to get stuck in.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk.
Some of us do this kind of marathon every Saturday during the regular season.
So what are your pointers?
I just want to say.
Yeah, Doyle,
yeah, look,
give,
so give us some pointers. Don't you know, don't bring your you know,
MLS narrative.
I say,
oh, Doyle.
You have to keep it slow with the booze, right? You can't spend it all on the first two games. Like, you want to start off with like a mimosa or something.
This is that West Coast schedule. Yeah, that's the West Coast schedule out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, Best Coast, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, by the end of game three, you can start going to town a little bit, because nobody wants to end the day completely in control of their own faculties.
Doyle, my question is for an intense playoff atmosphere matchup, is it a red or a white wine?
Oh, it's a red wine,
okay.
Especially this time of year. You know, you need something to warm the bones a little bit.
Yeah, certainly the bones will need warming, but Sunday's going to be a lot of
fun. Out in Berkeley, California.
Yeah, out in Berkeley, in the balmy confines of Northern California. Let's talk about the knockout round, guys, and we'll get to all these matchups that are coming up on Sunday in the second segment. I'm going to start you on Thursday night because I think that's the most timely way to do this, and we're going to start with DC United and Montreal. And 4 minutes in, Laurent Simon with a goal off of a set piece. Rob Vincent can't keep up with him. Kind of a wayward clearance opens things up for Ambrose Yongo. And then, Mancosu gets a goal before halftime. It's 2-0. Montreal drop into a shell. Very, very deep. I mean, they parked like 11 buses basically back there. This was this. I mean, Ben Olsen Doyle, when he sees that first goal go in at the 4-minute mark, he's got to just be furious because it absolutely sets up the Impact to do what they want to do. They get to bunker and break, and they have a platform to do it off of.
Yeah, and it was it was a list of everything that that DC shouldn't have done because it's not just Rob Vincent getting flat-footed and getting beat by Lawrence Amon. It was the whole sequence leading up to that. Bobby Boswell plays a ball out of the back that he has no business playing, tries to break three lines of defense, and of course that's a midfield turnover. And whenever that happens, Montreal are exponentially more dangerous than, you know, when you force them to build up just from the run of play. And then they don't clear they don't properly clear Ambroise Ayongo's cross after that. Like, all these little areas of the game where DC have to be dominant, they disappeared, specifically on that first goal, or in the build-up to that first goal. And that's how you put yourself behind the eight ball. And yeah, Ben Olsen was really unhappy after this game, and it is really understandable why.
Montreal started last year phenomenally. They had the CCL run. This is what they looked like. It's defending with numbers, countering through Oduro's speed, Piatti's ability in the open field, but it's so clean and pointed when they're in possession. It's not an abundant amount of time, but when Bernier was on the ball, when Piatti was on the ball, when Mancuso was able to recover the ball, they were able to complete passes, release the pressure a little bit, and move DC around. Now, DC's not Club America, and they're also not New York Red Bulls. So yep. I don't know how it will continue, but we talked about on Monday that Piatti is good enough to carry a team through to an MLS Cup.
Yeah.
And if this is how they're going to play and he's going to play that way, they have potential.
And look, the Drogba gate situation just continues on. I mean, I had basically assumed he's done, that he will play no more games for the Montreal Impact. That doesn't seem guaranteed anymore because he didn't travel with the team. That bulky back, he and Doyle in the same position perhaps here. He didn't travel with them to the nation's capital, but he found his way down there and he starts tweeting before the game starts that he's getting in late, that the traffic is bad. He's tweeting pictures from RFK, and then he's down in the locker room celebrating after. And then Mauro Biello is saying, hey, look, we talked about this. We knew he probably wasn't going to be good for this game, but he might be ready for Sunday. And if he's not ready for Sunday, there's a good chance he'll be ready for the next Sunday. So we might have that Drogba super sub.
And what Bush said and what all of the players said was it's not a distraction to them. So if that's true, and the only thing it is a question mark for the Red Bulls, then it's to their advantage. If the Red Bulls have to prepare that, potentially one of the greatest players in the history of the world, and a guy who still had 10 goals and 6 assists this season when having a bad year, could potentially play, could potentially come off the bench as a wrinkle, then I think that's fine for Montreal. If it's a distraction for them, if it's something that the players are actually wondering about, which is not how they made it sound, then it's fine.
The nice thing for Biello is that he's got some capital here because Mateo Mancuso has been really, really good.
Really good.
And
you can't pull him out. And so his decisions are justified here, and he can stand there and say, no, this is what we need you to be, and we've got a chance to go win a title with you doing this. Get on board the bus, man. Let's go. Let's try to figure this thing out and get to December 10th, and that's a good place to be for Mauro Biello. As you said, Doyle, Olsen and DC fans, a long offseason of soul-searching because they were – probably the most fancied team outside of Seattle in these knockout round games. Maybe LA, but LA just kind of always flies under the radar, and we basically assume that they're going to have a shot. And then they lay a complete egg here. What's next?
I think they try to bring back as many of these pieces as possible. The big question is going to be, do you break the bank, relatively speaking, for Lucho Acosta? And is he that level of a player? I think Acosta's really good. Is he Nicolas Ladero good? No. Is he Sasha Kljestan good? I don't think so. But he's a 22-year-old number 10 with a pedigree who's used to the league, who clearly understands his role on the team and in the locker room. I hope they get this guy. And then the other big question. There have been a lot of inquiries about Steve Birnbaum. We know about the ones from the Israeli league. There have been rumors of a couple from the Bundesliga. And look, We know that Birnbaum is a favorite of Jurgen Klinsmann, and Jurgen Klinsmann still has a lot of contacts out there. So given that Birnbaum will be entering the final year of his contract and that he has ambitions, I would suspect that he will be sold this offseason, and that is the big hole DC has to fill.
No doubt about that, because Bobby Boswell is getting on in years as well. Still very effective MLS player, but
did not look good last night.
No, the end is coming.
Last night.
The end is coming, just based on age and based on workload. Look, he still manages to hit 30-plus games a year.
And but. I think if you're DC, you don't try and rock the boat. You had a good year. We talked about the pieces like Mullins that have come in that you now know are known entities for next year. Sam's had injuries this year. He's older, so maybe you try and find a more permanent piece there, unless you think Lamar Nagel's that. But I think the other question with Acosta is, what does Benny Olsen think of him? Because he took him off yesterday when they were down 3-0. And if he's not injured, I don't understand why he's coming off in that situation for Boucher. You're bringing in an attacking player. You don't need to take off your number 10.
Yeah, I
Boucher's been really good.
No, but Doyle, they should both be on the field if you're down 3-0 in a one-game playoff.
I agree, but I don't think there's a huge difference in skill level between Acosta and Boucher. I think Boucher's actually kind of a better passer, but I agree with you. Ideally, DC would have had both those guys on the field.
They did say afterwards that they consider Acosta part of their future. We'll see what that means. But I'm with you, Doyle. He's not the game changer that a Nicholas Ladero is, that even, say, a Benny Failhaber is. And both those guys were in action in the late game on Thursday night. Seattle with a 1-0 victory against Sporting Kansas City. There were some controversial calls in this one, let's just say. And we'll get to that in just a second. But Nelson Valdez finally breaks his duck. Literally a year to the day. Not to the day, but basically a year. Knockout round to knockout round. Those are the last two goals he scored for the Seattle Sounders. He spent all year banging posts and missing sitters. And he got it done in the biggest moment. But he was offside. Undoubtedly offside. And a tough call, and a call that Sporting Kansas City we're not happy about at all. Peter Vermees saying after this one that the game was taken away from us, quote.
We are owed an apology from both pro and the league with Peter Vermees.
He was not happy, and Benny Failhaber was not happy after this match, and he was really dressing down Ismail Elfath afterwards. The first call this morning KC didn't like was a tackle by Ozzie Alonso in the midfield on Benny.
No, the first call they didn't like was Matt Beasler being called offside,
it's offside,
which was correct.
It's offside. Fine. They can be unhappy about that, but the referees got that call right. He was offside. It was a sliver. It was barely, but barely is still offside. The one that I think that Benny was especially upset about was the Ozzie Alonso tackle. Ozzie's on a yellow. It's kind of the beginnings of perhaps a break. Some open field ahead of Benny. Ozzie comes steaming in. Looks to me like he gets the ball, and Benny drags that right foot and gets a little piece. But definitely a judgment call. One that I think if it goes yellow and Ozzie goes off, people don't complain that much unless you're a Sounders fan. It went the other way, and not that many people seem to be complaining other than Sporting Kansas City fans. And then the goal, the game-winning goal in, late on here in this match, 86th, 87th minute, right at the death, right as we were thinking, oh boy, we're going to get extra time, which was going to be great because this was the most intense, exciting match of the knockout
round.
Best
0-0 game up until that point that I've seen in a really long time in MLS.
Benny Failhaber in screw-you mode, which was really fun. But the goal comes from Jovan Jones just getting a little bit of space, whipping the ball in. Nelson Valdez at that near post. Early run, good header. Goal is about a foot offside, but it got missed. So, you know, life's not fair. Soccer's not fair. Seattle are moving on. Sporting Kansas City are going home. What did you think of the Ozzie call? Because I'm going to take it back to that because I think that would have changed the game, obviously, completely. All of a sudden, your probably best 11 MLSD mid is out of there, and you're 11-10 at home in a 0-0 game in which Sporting Kansas City looks pretty good.
Real time, I thought it was clearly a yellow, and on replay, I think Elfath did really well. I think he did really well not to react immediately. Ozzie doesn't get the ball. He also doesn't get the man. Benny drags
I thought
foot.
He got the ball.
Well, they gave a throw into Seattle, and it didn't go off Benny. So if they're saying that Ozzie got the ball,
I'm going to say that the throw-in call was incorrect.
Okay, so he blew the throw-in
call.
Right,
correct.
Sporting KC can be furious
about.
Yeah,
like that throw-in could have. Who knows what that throw-in leads to?
I think that Benny goes up over him and then sticks his toe down and drags it on Alonso to go down. Now, you could say, well, if Benny didn't jump at all, then he would have gotten taken out. But that's his prerogative.
Right.
It looked like a terrible play from Ozzie. And he gets up and starts wagging his finger, and you're like, that doesn't mean anything, Ozzie. Of course you're wagging your finger. But it was right in front of the fourth official.
It was.
Elfath took his time. He spoke to his assistant referees, and I thought he made the correct call in the end.
Yeah, I thought, for me, that's the right call as well. Obviously, in the playoffs, razor-thin margins. One side's going to be happy. One side's not going to be happy. But, Doyle, this is interesting because Benny Fehlhaber comes out and has his best game in a long, long time. He absolutely controlled this one in a game in which we expected Nicklas Lodero to do something similar. And now he doesn't have a contract with Sporting Kansas City. What did you make of this game overall? And then I'm curious to know what you think about Benny's future.
I thought Benny was I thought he was the best player on the field, other than maybe Stephen Fry. And it wasn't particularly close. I think Sporting let him down and let themselves down by not addressing the hole that was created when Christian Nemeth left this offseason. And that's been the story of their year, and it was the story of this game. Graham Zusi hits the post. Graham Zusi open from 14 yards and blasts over. Dom Dwyer got put into Chad Marshall's pocket for the most part, which is fine. Sometimes that happens to a center forward. If that's the case, then your wingers and maybe your other central midfielders have to pick up their game, pick up the slack. And Fehlhaber did it. The other guys on the field didn't. We've seen this coming for 7 months, and that was the story of how Sporting season began. It's the story of how it ended as well.
To be fair, it's pretty easy to get put in Chad Marshall and Roman Torres' pocket. I mean, those the huge pockets that they have. Yeah. So it's tough for Dom Dwyer up there. There's no doubt about that. Seattle are moving on. Sporting Kansas City are going home. Certainly they will want to address that because they tried to go Brad Davis. They tried to go Justin Mapp. They tried to go veterans and see if they could address it that way this offseason. It didn't work out for them in this sense. And Roger Espinosa.
And they have to bring Fehlhaber back. I mean, look, he'll be 32. I think in January, which is not super young, but he's strung together 3.5 straight really, really good years as a number 10 in this league. And he played one of his best games last night on the heels of two pretty great months with Sporting's backs against the wall and nobody else showing up. They're nuts if they let him go.
All right, Seattle FC Dallas, that one's on Sunday. We'll talk about that in the second segment. Quickly, let's hit those Wednesday games. Toronto FC 3, Philadelphia 1. The Union, 8 straight without a win in the season. They were going down, and I don't think it was really in doubt for much of this game. Ken Tribbett with a really naive bit of defending that opens things up for Josie Altidore to flick a little ball over Andre Blake for Giovinco to massage home, a finish that I'm not sure – well, I'm pretty sure most players – blaze into the upper deck there, but he puts it in, a good one for him. And Toronto FC roll forward Jonathan Osorio with a goal in this one, and they just kind of coast. They're my favorite, I think, right now. I think they're going to go to MLS Cup in the East. I think they're going to go to MLS Cup. I just think that they have too many difference makers, and I think,
which showed in this game, because they don't love to control the game.
No, they don't.
And
especially
look,
with that really, I think it really is a 5-3-2. I don't think it's
a 3-5-2. Whatever you want to call it. It's two wing backs either way playing in midfield. I mean, they push up. Mauro and Betashore definitely got up the field in the second half, though. So in the first half, I thought the quality shown through for Toronto, even if the style isn't dominating. In the second half, I thought the mentality to sit that deep against a team that struggles to score like Philly was wrong. And I think that they're going to sit deeper against NYCFC because of the nature of the matchup. But I thought the mentality of that of we're just going to protect a 2-0 lead hurt them, because Philly just started to get opportunities that didn't look like they were coming at all before then. And that, to me, is a little bit of inexperience and a little bit of worry from whether it's the players or Vanny or a combination of the two. And that's something that has to get fixed going forward.
Osorio getting a goal in this one. That's two straight with a goal for him. He's opening up Giovinco and Josie right now, and that's good news for them. They need that third option. We've talked about that a lot. We'll talk more about what Philly does later on this offseason. Right now it's all about playoffs. We'll get into TFC NYCFC in depth in the second segment. The other game that night, another 3-1 win for the LA Galaxy over RSL. Emmanuel Boateng goes Lionel Messi in this one. That first goal, incredible, leaves the defense standing there. Wiggles through, a little left-footed finish. You're smiling at me.
Boateng, like Messi comparison.
No, hey, I didn't make it. It wasn't me. I'm not the one who started this. Landon Donovan started this, Dave.
Hashtag legend.
Yeah, with the capital D at the end. And Alan Gordon starting up top in the number nine and validating Matt Doyle's rant that's continued for like 10 months at this point that Giovanni Dos Santos and the Galaxy need a target.
They do. They're better when they play off a target forward. I mean, it is just another another example is what they did to RSL in this game for the first 45 minutes. I think it was Dan Gargan who tweeted out this was the best half of the year for the Galaxy. And I agree with him, and I don't think it's actually all that close unless you want to go back to the games that they won over maybe like Houston and I think it was New England way back in April. This was LA at their best, and it's still the same thing for Bruce Arena. Can you figure out how to work Robbie Keane into this situation without compromising a lot of the stuff that went right?
That's right, and Jesse Zardes is apparently back in training with this team. What if he can come back for the conference finals if they get there? All of a sudden, if you can stick him at that number nine, maybe?
I don't know that you should expect to get
I'm not
much
saying you
of
expect.
Anything.
I'm just saying there's a possibility. You never know.
Yeah. You don't know what type of shape he's going to be in coming off that long an injury.
Oh, I know.
But
Bruce does.
Bruce definitely
We don't know.
Does.
We're sitting here in the broom closet just
guessing. I mean,
they
took a guy who had been out for 2 years and played him 20 minutes in his first game and played him 30 minutes in his next and so on and so forth. Like they can do that with Zardes. They can play him for 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
He's not going to be that far off the pace, Gasman.
No, the difference is Landon had regular season to do that. And let's be totally honest, RSL didn't exactly show up for this playoff game. Rather than playing the Colorado Rapids in the conference semifinals and Seattle or FC Dallas in the conference finals.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. RSL, this was a poor game. Olmes Garcia starts up top. Yurimov Sisian comes on late on.
Comes on for Burrito, and Olmes stays in because Olmes Garcia has been phenomenal in his MLS career.
Yeah, he's not been particularly effective. Second game in a row, Plata was upset about his early sub and decision day. Burrito not happy about this sub as well, and I can see why. There's a big decision coming for Real Salt Lake. Jeff Kassar is out of contract. They've got to figure out what they want to do in the expansion draft. Who do they leave unprotected? Do they stick with kind of the old guard? Craig Weibel with a lot to figure out.
We're going
to
talk about coaching openings with Cabrera and everything later, but outside of Minnesota and LAFC, that might be RSL may be the only MLS head coach opening.
We will see. A lot to talk about, especially with Sunday coming up, four straight games in the conference semifinals. We'll be right back, and we'll break those down.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe, and I have a burst of energy now because we're getting going, and we're talking about the conference semifinals, the first legs on Sunday, and it all starts with Montreal and the New York Red Bulls, 3 p.m. Eastern. Then we hit L.A. and Colorado at 5. Both of those games are on ESPN, TSN up north, and then Toronto FC, NYCFC, and Seattle FC Dallas, both those games on FS1 and TSN. It is, like, the matchups are great. Like, we have nothing to complain about with these matchups. This is maybe not exactly how you would plan it out because you might push DC on and then you have the Atlantic Cup there. But I'm really excited for Montreal and New York Red Bulls. I don't think that's a one to bat your eyes at either way.
You know Jesse's excited about it.
He was at RFK last night.
Why
of
not?
Course he was. Of course he made the trip down to RFK.
He loves a good RFK midweek game.
Oh, God. I don't even know what to say about that at this point. Let's talk about that first game, the impact, hosting this one at Stade Saputo. As I said, 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Damon Royer could be fit for this one. I'm not sure that has a huge impact because I don't think there's any chance.
Whoa.
No chance that Alex Mühle doesn't start this game and play a big role.
No, there's a chance Grella doesn't.
Yeah, well,
no, there's
point.
No chance of that either.
I mean,
not coming off injury. You're the one that's poo-pooing Jesse's artist out here. So, hamstring injury.
Yeah, okay, whoa. That's like 2.5 months of injury time between the two of them. Royer was a difference maker for them. Here's a little stat for you guys.
I know what you're going to say here.
Daniel Royer has one goal in MLS.
Who's it against?
I can't remember now.
Oh, God, who was it?
Montreal Doompock.
Yep, that's who it was against. So he has a little bit of a history there. Three meetings this year, 3-0 Montreal in March. That was in the middle of that Red Bulls slide, just the terrible beginning for them. And then New York took two results in August and in September, 3-1 and 1-0. So, you know, it's been a little bit of a split, but I don't think there's some definite edge to either team based on previous matchups this season. I think it's really interesting from a tactical perspective, though, because as we said, we know Montreal are going to sit back and they're going to invite the Red Bulls forward. The Red Bulls, meanwhile, I mean, there's almost an element of, look, try to possess the ball in that final third, and if you lose it, that's not necessarily a terrible thing because you hope that Montreal then extends themselves a little bit and maybe gives you a little bit of space to attack through and maybe gets that turnover in midfield. How do you see this one playing out?
I think you kind of nailed it. It's going to be the Red Bulls trying to press the tempo and trying to make Montreal extend themselves. I mean, you use the right terminology 100%. And if that happens, I think I like the Red Bulls' chances of finding those gaps. The one thing that is maybe in Montreal's corner here is that the Red Bulls aren't a dominant aerial team from the run of play. When they score on crosses, it's crosses along the ground to Bradley Wright Phillips' feet. I mean, they do, like, Royer scored on a header against them last time, for sure. So they can do it. But if you look at the goal Lamar Nagel scored last night and the ones that, you know, Kamara scored last year and Jozy Altidor scored 2 weeks ago, like, Montreal struggles with guys who can get off the ground in the final third, in the 18. And the Red Bulls don't really present that. So I think that is something that maybe makes bunkering a pretty decent option for the impact in this game. But the Red Bulls are still favorites.
I know I keep going back to this, but last year in the postseason when Columbus sat back, Red Bulls didn't have anything to break it down. They went with the two forwards eventually, and it worked. Montreal's going to do that. So I think
Perhaps even to a larger extent.
So I think DC may have actually been a better matchup because DC's been playing a more open game. And I think New York has too much quality, and two, I think they'll dominate too much of the possession to not get goals just because of the sheer amount of opportunities or sheer amount of time on the ball that they'll have. But I don't think it's the easiest matchup for New York. And Montreal, I mean, your first game, you don't even need to score. You just need to keep New York off the score sheet. Because if you're going to bunker and counter, it's the same home and away at that point. And if you get the away goal, I mean, you might be cruising in the second leg. And Odero and Piatti are going to feed off that. And I wouldn't love to see Aurelien Collin, you know, isolated one-on-one with either of those guys with his whole midfield pushed up in situations. So I think there's hope for Montreal, but they have to not make a stupid mistake early, and they need Piatti to be on his
And it's going to be
again.
Tough to avoid that because they are going to be tired on Sunday. They are going to be so tired. I mean, even a normal age team would be tired, but if you look at the age of that midfield, those are going to be some heavy legs, and I think New York's going to run them into the ground. And this is where Montreal's
That's why you don't run if you're those midfielders, Doyle. You just do what you've been doing. Why run?
Kind of like the Pepe Le Pew thing where you just sort of jog around. Look, I think that New York is going to win a ton of second balls in midfield, and Montreal is just going to have to be super disciplined about keeping their shape because nobody wins that second ball and then transitions to attack and gets into the box faster than New York.
Yeah, I mentioned Alex Mueller. I think this is a huge matchup, him and Piatti and whoever plays on that right side for the Red Bulls, because that's where the danger comes from. And if you can keep him off his game and out of space, you've got a really good chance against this impact team. And Alex Mueller might be the best defensive winger, so to speak, in MLS this year. The amount of work rate he has, his focus on that side, his dedication to that role is a little bit – it's not Lloyd Sam-esque. Let's just put it that way. It's a completely different look for the Red Bulls. I think that's going to be a big matchup for them. But I would be a little bit worried if I was Jesse Marsh about my central defenders against Mancosu and Oduro and Piatti, because those guys are really good at pulling you out of the central channels. And Aurelien Collin is really susceptible to chasing things that he shouldn't be chasing out of the central channels. And if you can pull them out of that space, they're good enough on the ball and they're smart enough to play the right ball, to get in the right positions, to have that little moment of magic. And if they can snag a goal, let's say they get one goal, whenever it comes at Red Bull Arena and they manage to kind of hold off on the Red Bulls, that's like you said, Dave, that's all it takes. 2-1 is a great result for them.
Yep.
1-1 is a banner result for them, and I could see that happening, especially if the defense stands up the way it did against DC United. But we'll see what happens in that game. 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, Montreal
also,
and the Red Bulls.
This may not have anything to do with it, but we mentioned it. This, no one goes on the road and wins in the knockout. Houston did in 2012. They then went home and won 2-0 their first game. There may be – this, of course, is an older team, as Doyle mentioned, but an element of that energy. I mean, you could see in the videos of Drogba in the – I guess you could call it the dugout – with Simon and Juandro Lafray, like how excited they are, how excited they were coming off that game. So if they can get the recovery in, I think it's going to be jumping.
It is. It's a team that knows exactly who they are, and Drogba seems back on board, and that could be a recipe. It's all about these little breaks as the playoff comes. It's all about building momentum, and maybe the spark is there for the impact. 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, moving on, LA Galaxy, Colorado. I'm arguing, and I'm going to keep arguing, that undoubtedly LA are the favorites in the Western Conference. And you mentioned that first half against RSL, guys. I think the reason why they're the favorites is because they're the one team that I think is really primed to have like 15 unstoppable minutes and then just lock you down the rest of the series. They don't need to have 180 good minutes. They just need to have 15 good minutes, get a couple goals, and then go shut the games down. And these games are going to be so tight.
But is Landon Donovan going to get to the end line like he did against Colorado?
You mean against
RSL? I mean, he's going to be going against Mark Birch.
Yeah, I think he's got a decent chance.
Mark Birch is a good player, but he's not going to...
But Colorado hasn't given...
Even against the tired Landon Donovan, he's not going to keep
But then, does GDS win that header against Burling or Huberg or whoever it is? Is Gordon wide open? I don't know that it's that easy for them. And so I don't know that they can put up two goals in 15 minutes against Colorado, because no one's done that all season against this Colorado team.
Well, NYCFC did.
Yeah, okay.
But that was a little bit of a...
You heard it here, folks. David Goss says NYCFC is nobody. Just said that.
Guaranteed.
Wow, Doyle, trying to transfer that voodoo off onto me.
Yeah, we'll get to Doyle's predictions when we talk about NYCFC.
I just think that this is a fascinating matchup from like the cultural point of view of the grinded out Colorado versus obviously LA and the glitz and glamour and all that.
But still the grinded out. I mean, like,
yeah,
it's glitz and glamour, but ultimately LA is willing to pull on the work gloves and say, nope, we're not moving. This is it. Done and dusted.
Yeah.
And I think they have the guys that can do it. They have a number of veterans that come off the bench that, in a Lerwintowicz type role, that are like, this is my role. I sit in, I kick some guys, I hit some big switches, and I make sure that we don't screw up from a communication standpoint.
Although he didn't get the start versus
No,
him,
I know.
So I don't know
I'm
what
just saying
that
that's,
was.
That's where you lock it down right. late. But look, Sebastian Legette and Bajay Husidic were basically flawless in this match.
They completed like 97% of their passes. It was ridiculous. And that's what Colorado's not going to let them do. Colorado's not going to go out and be the Red Bulls. They're not going to press them and everything, but they don't give up easy passing lanes, and they protect the hell out of that central defense. That goal, that messy goal that Boateng scored, that, like, Colorado doesn't allow that. They don't allow you to go at their central defenders. So I think you're right, Gassman, in saying, is Colorado gonna give LA that 15 minutes where they're just absolutely rampant? I don't see that happening. But I do think that LA have individual ways that they can pry open this Rapids defense. They just haven't shown it all year. They've played 270 minutes against them, and they've only scored one goal, and it was off a corner kick. It was like the only header that Schuberg has lost all year. Daniel Starris rose above. So that's about it.
One of the goals for Colorado in the only win, because it was 0-0, 1-1, and 1-0, was a 95th-minute Marco Papo golazo. So it's been very tight. It's been very cagey between these two
teams.
Which
you can basically set on a clock, Marco Papa, 95th-minute golazo.
Yeah, something like that. You can set a timer for that. Yeah. And
for LA, it's huge. It seems like Alan Gordon will be fine. Obviously, we talked about how
he kind of pulled off with like a hip injury there.
Or a groin, something like
Big decisions here, though. I expect Jermaine Jones will start in this one. We haven't talked about him in a long time as an actual person playing soccer because he's been hurt. Because
we have talked about him consistently.
Yeah, but it's not as an actual person on the field doing things. But he's back. That could be a huge gain for Colorado. Regardless of what you think about Jermaine or his season or his health or whatever, he is a difference maker. And in the playoffs, like the impact they're doing with Drogba, when you've got the opportunity to have a difference maker in your team for a must-win or must-get-result game, you put him in there. So I think Jermaine will start. The question, I think, is Robbie Keane, guys. What will he do? Because he looked like a shell of who he's been for the last, 4 or 5 years here in MLS when he came in for Alan Gordon. Just didn't look mobile, didn't look sharp, didn't look like a player that you can really afford to start, especially in a road playoff game.
I mean, this is a home playoff
game. It is, but I'm looking forward to that second game because I'm not sure that he'll be ready for this game, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think we're probably seeing, you know, we saw, I think, the Javier Morales era end on Wednesday for RSL, and we might be seeing the Keane era end sometime over the next, 10 days or so for LA. He's still capable of incredible attacking magic, but he just, it doesn't happen often enough. He's not healthy often enough, and he's such a liability defensively that, it does feel like this is the end.
And I think Bruce is going to have to play it as it's going to be what's going on in the game, right? If they're up 1-0, I don't know that you go to him because you're protecting the lead and you don't know what you have in his legs. If you need a goal, though, you have to bring him on. There's no question about that. I think maybe the amount of minutes because of Gordon pulling up with the injury was more than what they wanted from him on Thursday. So that's something they'll have to manage going into Sunday.
Marlon Harrison, of course, on this one. Can he trouble Ashley Cole? Really good, one of the best left backs in MLS, if not the best this year. But Harrison's been
Cole,
very good.
Cole was great on Wednesday. Cole was absolutely fantastic.
So,
didn't mean to cut you off
good.
Harrison has he has found a way time after time down the stretch here to make something out of nothing because his first 10 yards, he creates separation like few other wingers in this league. So that's one to keep an eye on for sure.
Really fun matchup here. Galaxy, Colorado, kind of the old guard, the many-time champions, their race for Sace ongoing against Colorado, the upstarts, who surprised everybody this year. Well,
they're an MLS original, so that's why
I made
a face.
Yeah, but they're the upstarts.
For everyone out there, I made a face when we said
really
the upstarts.
Yeah, really big eye roll there. That doesn't translate to radio. 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Toronto FC and NYCFC roll us on from BMO Field. It's 7 p.m. on FS1. This is a great matchup. I think it's probably the most fun matchup of the conference semifinals. These two teams last year played some straight goal fests.
And we have no idea what to expect from this one. They haven't played since May. They played two times, May and March. So we have zero idea what these two teams look like together. It seems like they're both going to be playing a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2,
whatever
you want to call it.
Yeah. It's not what I want to call it. Really, that's not how we should base.
Why do we think that NYCFC is going to play a 5-3-2?
Because they have the last two games, right? With RJ Allen and Matarita, and
they did the last game against Columbus. Did they game before that?
I believe they did in DC as well, when they got blown out.
No, they didn't. That was a 4-3-3.
Well, either way, Doyle, what do you think they should do? Because they're going on the road. They're playing on a big field. It's not NYCFC's, bandbox at Yankee Stadium. How do you approach this game if you're Patrick Vieira? That may be the most interesting tactical decision of the playoffs because we know that Patrick Vieira is willing to move things around, to shift, to find a different way, or to find a tweak of the way that he likes to do things.
I think that he has it's really like a 5-4-1 the way they play it, or I guess you want to call it a 3-4-3. But I think that's just the club he has in the bag. And I think he took it out specifically against Columbus because what Columbus had done earlier in the year is bring Justin Miram inside and basically present a second attacking midfield option and overwhelm on Anthony Iraola. So that was a specific gambit that he made. I think they're back to the 3-4-3. None of the wingers that Toronto have is anything like Miram. And you got to be pretty sure at this point that TFC will be going to the 5-3-2 themselves. So I think we'll see the 3-4-3 from them. It'll be Lampard there, and we'll see how much gas he has in the tank.
NYCFC is a totally different style of opponent to TFC, so it's going to look a lot different than it did versus Philly. No one from Philly really moved the center backs out of position at all. No one made runs across them through the channels. Lampard's ability to just show up in different areas, no one was really doing for Philly. So I think that's got to be exciting for a fan to watch because I don't know how mobile and how good Hagelin and Valentin have ideas of where they want to be and where they should be. And when you look at the goals TFC gave up towards the end of the season, I think there was moments like that. Chicago scored one where Dalou just makes a run across that back line and no one follows him. So I think that's something to watch out for, and that will be interesting, on top of which Villa's just a better finisher and a better player than Sapong's been.
Yeah, no doubt about that. His runs are going to be much different as well. I think you alluded to that. The one thing I would say is he really does love that channel between the right back and the right center back. And if you have three center backs back there, yeah, you're susceptible if you fall asleep like that. But you'd think maybe they'd be able to gum up some of those channels that he likes to go through, and that could be an issue for NYCFC. It's a big matchup for these two. Toronto FC have big expectations. They've got the big payroll. They've got the reigning MVP. They've got Josie and Michael, perhaps, people are saying, in his last go-round for Toronto, should an offer come in this offseason. On the other side, New York City FC are, in large part, I think, playing with house money in some ways, although they're seeing the end of, I don't want to call it an era because it's 2 years old, but, you know, Lampard and Pirlo can't play forever. So.
And you don't know how often you'll be back. That's one of the things we've seen. I mean, look at the Revs from 2 years ago. So I don't know that you want to waste this opportunity. We mentioned it, I think, earlier, a week or so ago, but no one in the Eastern Conference that's left has won an MLS Cup. So everyone here right now has the opportunity that they haven't had before, and I don't think that's something that you really want to waste. Josie made a comment about the rebirth of TFC and soccer after that win. I think BMO is going to be fun on Sunday.
Yeah,
I think
it's definitely going to. 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1. Check that one out. Check out TSN as well. Seattle FC Dallas finishes it off at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Dallas chasing the treble. Seattle chasing a historic year that basically is a roller coaster for them. And right now they're on the upward tick. Three straight years of playoff matchups here. These two know each other extremely well. Last year, Dallas got the job done. This year, who has the edge, Doyle? Because both these teams are a little – crippled is not the right word, but maybe it is. You know, Clint Dempsey not around. Mauro Diaz not around. Both of them had to figure out how to win without their star player. Who's got the better chance of doing it here?
Well, I think that Dallas are still the better team, but I think that – in these sort of situations, I default to whoever has the best player. And Lodeiro is the best player on either of these teams. I think he has at least one moment of magic in him in this series. And that may be enough because these two teams are not going to give up a ton of goals. So I think that's the edge, but it's going to be close. And it's probably not going to be the prettiest soccer. I expect the central defenses to be sort of the defining aspect of this particular series.
And Roman Torres came on late, obviously, with the injury, but four of the best center backs in the league going up between the two teams. So I agree with Doyle. I think that's going to be the heart of it. And Dallas is probably going to, you know, be strong defensively. They have a great defensive midfield. And
that's actually what I think when you were talking about Lodeiro. We saw Sporting Kansas City, in large part, hold Lodeiro down last night, or at least not give him the opportunity to do some of the things he's done before. And they play with that double pivot, and they play a rugged style in there, and they cover a lot of ground with Mustavar and Nagamura. Guerrero and Acosta, if anyone can shadow Lodeiro, who's just his work rate is so good, and he's all over the field, and he's almost impossible to track. If anybody can do it, it's this FC Dallas side.
Not decision day. The week before, they did it, and Lodeiro has that free kick. I think I agree with you. I think over 180 minutes, he will do something. I don't think KC would have been able to keep him down for two games.
Right.
And if Seattle's defense plays the way that they've been playing, I think that it will be enough, as Doyle said. Maybe not in the first leg, but over the course of the two legs at some point. Also, I don't know how much you're going to get, but Jordan Morris, that was his first playoff game ever. So you expect him to feel more comfortable, at least, over these two games.
Nice to have the first two at home as well. Central League Field, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Seattle FC Dallas. Doyle, before we get out of here and go to the mailbag and talk a little about some of these coaching rumors, I'm going to focus you on FC Dallas and how they're going to create without Mauro Diaz. We haven't really seen a ton of it because he got hurt so late in the season. How does this team go about trying to get that away goal in this match?
I think they sit deep and counter in the first game. I think it'll be a 4-4-2 with probably Urruti and Tesho up top. And then if they need to change around the hour mark, they bring in Mauro Rosales and switch to 4-2-3-1 or maybe even a 4-5-1 and sort of go through him. But I don't think they play Mauro Rosales from the start. I don't think that they play him really more than 35, 40 minutes tops, and try to keep him healthy for leg two.
FC Dallas chasing history at 9:30. The game start at 3. ESPN with the first two at 3 and 5, and then you'll switch over to FS1. All the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com.
And on SiriusXM. Yes. Channel 85. Yeah, if you're driving or you're out, you can listen to all the games.
Listening right here. Make sure you don't miss any of this action. We're going to go away for now. We'll be right back. Wilmer Cabrera appears to be the next head coach of the Houston Dynamo.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I know I laughed when you left, but now I know I only hurt myself.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. Finishing off the show here on this Friday morning, and then I'm going to go get a nap. Recover from the knockout round. Wednesday and Thursday nights, the beginning of the 2016 Audi MLS Cup playoffs have been a whole lot of fun. I hope your bracket is doing well, because remember, we have some MLS Live subscriptions, some other things to give away on that one. So, you know what? If you didn't hit the deadline,
what's your final four?
Too bad, so sad. Final four, what is my final four? I know it's L.A. and Toronto. I believe it's Toronto and the Red Bulls in the Eastern Conference. And I believe I have Seattle, L.A. out west, just because, kind of like we said, I think that Lodeiro and Morris are more likely to create a moment or two of magic. So that's my final four.
Doyle?
The New Yorks, Colorado, and Seattle.
And who wins it? Who's in the final?
Colorado loses 2-1 to NYCFC.
A ton of people they've been calling Colorado. Siggy did. Martin Rennie did.
I have.
Sean John last night went FC Dallas for championship.
There you go. Yeah. I have Seattle, Colorado, New York, Toronto.
And?
Colorado losing to Toronto in the final.
All right. T-Dot, the six, according to two of us at least. Let us know what you think is going to go down from here on out, or whatever. We'll get your questions on Monday. For now, though, we're going to talk about some coaching.
So
moves.
None of us picked FC Dallas, by the
no.
way, this round.
Okay. Sean John did, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he knows a thing or two about MLS.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Houston, because the Wade Barrett interim time is not going to translate into full-time work as the head coach of the Houston Dynamo for Wade Barrett. He's a club legend, but it's still up in the air whether he'll be sticking around for 2017. Matt Jordan has said that they've offered him, the GM there, as they've offered him a spot in the technical staff, but all intents, or all indications, I should say, are that Wilmer Cabrera, Rio Grande Valley Toros head coach, who basically an employee of the Dynamo, they're the ones who pay him, they're the ones who direct him. He will be the next head coach of the Houston Dynamo. Will Bruin wasn't happy about it. He tweeted his displeasure, his disappointment. Same thing for Shannon Williams. There's been a little bit of gnashing of teeth, Doyle. What do you think of this decision, Wilmer Cabrera getting this job? His previous head coaching job at MLS was with Chivas USA.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that when he was at Chivas USA, he got a great year out of Cubo Torres, who is still under contract with Houston. So maybe that had something to do with it. The way it's been messaged from the powers that be with Houston is that they wanted someone with more experience as a head coach, but Wilmer doesn't have a ton. He's got 1 year with Rio Grande Valley. He has 1 year with Chivas USA, and he had 1 year, I think, with the USU 17s. So, look, I think they could have done worse. I don't know Wilmer that much, but I know a lot of people who think highly of him, and I thought that he did pretty well with Rio Grande Valley. I like that they have someone who not only knows the league, but has shown, I mean, he was Oscar Pareja's assistant. So, and he worked with guys like Dylan Powers and Shane O'Neill and that young Rapids team back in 2012 and 2013 and helped them develop. So I like that they have a guy with that kind of track record. That said, I do feel a little bit like they might have missed out on something here with Wade Barrett, because I thought that, look, it was the least talented roster in the league. And it was an absolute mess. And he took a team that was a disaster and turned it into something respectable real fast.
No, I was just going to say the things that I would key on in this signing is, like Doyle said, U.S. youth international coach, coached in USL, coached under Oscar Pereja, who's done so well with the academy. They're getting beat right now in their own state by FC Dallas by a sizable margin in bringing through young players, bringing through academy players. And I think that that's something that this signing can start to help alleviate. Also, someone who was a Colombian international, so maybe able to connect better with the young Latino players that Oscar Pereja has been able to bring through.
I think the point on Kubo and young players is a good one. I think the Dynamo decided they wanted somebody who is going to teach and improve the talent they have, because they're going to need that. They're not going to be a team that goes out and signs $5 million players. So they're going to have to find guys and then make them better. And I think they expect Wilmer Cabrera to be that guy.
Fourth coach in 3 years. So at some point, we have to take a look at the front office as well.
No doubt about that. Look, a bunch of big games coming up on Sunday. It starts at 3. It ends at midnight or so. Stay tuned with us. All the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.